your dad treating women that way, and you must have experienced it many, many examples over the years.
Yeah.
At what point did you realize that that was him and you didn't have to buy into that?
Oh, that was actually after I came back from Europe as an exchange student. Mm-hmm. I had the absolute honor and the gift of being selected as a Rotary exchange student for the 1987-88 year. So I went to Denmark. I'd chosen France, by the way, because I was taking French in high school and loved French and was a natural at languages. But I got my second choice, which was Scandinavia because of my allergies, apparently. So I don't know how that worked back then, but I got Scandinavia. So I cried when I got Denmark, but it turned out to be the most pivotal year of my entire life. So I was honored to live with four different families while I was there. It's the way the exchange program works. Is that it's usually three, but I had a family that didn't work out. But one of them became my family, and they still are. And I learned that it was okay to have opinions. It was okay to think differently. It was okay to believe differently. And different societies honored women. Different societies, they uplifted them instead. So Iceland was part of the Danish crown for many, many years. And Iceland in 1975 had the first all-women walkout from work. In 1975, all women walked off their jobs for equality. And it was a big theme in Scandinavia and especially in Denmark. And so I realized that I had a voice. I was 16, but I got a voice. I'd never had a voice before, ever. Not one that was listened to by the people who I believed were important to me. And when I came back, my father will to this day, and even said it last Friday, worst decision he ever made was letting me go to Denmark. Because, and I think Andrea, the quote last Friday, just to share, because I did a LinkedIn post about it, was the worst thing that ever happened to our family was letting you go to Denmark as an exchange student. We had no idea how much your personality would have changed or would change. Now, to be fair, I think my personality would have changed at some point anyway. I would have learned these things, but I learned them by living there.
Oh, and I don't know whether to laugh or cry.
Oh,
at
you
this
can
point.
Laugh. I laugh now, Mark. It's not a big deal. Not a big deal. I love who I am. I like who I am. And if they don't, they don't. And that's okay. I don't have to have them like me.
Yeah.
Yeah, their family.
So let's talk about, you told me after the coma, a profound thing happened to you that you learned about yourself and how you had been running your business. And that is, you learned you didn't have to do everything yourself.
Absolutely.
That must have been an eye opener. I mean, did it feel like a punch in the gut at the time, or did it feel like, wow, this is a relief because I finally get it?
It felt like a gift, Mark. It felt like an absolute gift. So I'd had a business coach who'd been telling me this all along. In fact, he showed me this diagram where the CEO sits in the middle and all the departments go around and the CEO touches everything until you become a real CEO and you move out of the middle and you move into one or two of the quadrants. That wasn't a quadrant. They were pie shaped. One or two of pie pieces, because they were way more than four. And I just didn't get it. And so before my coma, I touched 85% of the projects that came into the office. I knew the payroll numbers. I knew how many hours people had worked on what project. I knew the clients. I knew everything about it. And the gift that happened for me is that I was away from my business for 8 months in 2008. 8 months, because when I got out of my coma, I was in a wheelchair for 6 weeks. And then I was with a walker, and I couldn't even stay awake more than 6 hours at a time until probably November or December of that year. And my coma was
in
June.
Your brain was just wiped out, yeah?
Absolutely wiped out.
I have to ask you, were you aware of anything when you were in the coma, or was it just like going to sleep and waking up?
No. So really interesting side story here. I have dreams that I had while I was in the coma. There's three of them specifically, and I still have them periodically when I'm stressed. Really interesting, same dreams. One, I'm on a helicopter landing pad and it's cold. And it's just really interesting. Another one, I am rolling my kid's stroller through a maze in the pitch black dark. And then the third one, and there's way more detail, but the third one, do you know that ride at the fair called the zipper where all the change falls out of your pocket? Yeah, I'm on the zipper and it will never stop. So really interesting. They're all anxiety dreams.
Yeah.
So whenever I'm really anxious, I have them. And I don't have them more than about once a year, one or two of them. But I'm always like, why am I still having this dream? But the thing I remember most, and it wasn't, I would say, a memory, but it's a realization. About 3 weeks after coming home from the hospital, I'd have these songs in my head, and songs that I didn't necessarily listen to all the time. Like, I had Lionel Richie in my head, or I would have a song by Kenny Rogers in my head, or, things that weren't necessarily things I had on repeat. And I finally said to my husband, "Did you sing me this song?" He goes, "Yeah, I sang you that song all the time." And
Oh,
then I'd say,
wow.
"Did you sing me this song?" "Yeah, I sang you that song all the time." He said, "I sang every single day multiple songs too, because it would
Oh.
bring my blood pressure down." And so those songs were there, they were in my head. So whatever people say about people in a coma not being able to hear you, not being able to recognize that you're there, it's wrong. They know. I knew. I just didn't know I knew until later on when I would hear these songs in my head. Like, why is this song in my head? Oh, my husband sang it to me.
That's awesome. What a beautiful story. A turning point in your career, Andrea, came when you wrote an article that went viral. The article was called Never Apologize for Being a Woman. Set up the background to what led you to write that article and why you think it blew up the way it did in such a good way.
All right, I'm going to correct you first. It is
Okay.
never apologize for being a strong woman.
Ah.
Aha.
Big difference, Mark.
Actually, there is a difference there. And I say that because it was super important at the time. I sat in a coffee shop in Belltown writing an article. It was December 10th, 2019. And the quote, I always used a quote or I used a statement from my article. And my article statement that time was, "Strong women don't have attitude, they have standards and boundaries." And this article is about the eight things, basically the eight things that I believe strong woman brings to all of her encounters. And it went viral. And when I say viral, it went crazy viral. I got a call in January, less than a month later, from News 4 in Chicago. And the reporter said, "Do you realize, first of all, how'd they find me?" Oh, reporters have their ways. But do you realize you have one of the top 10 most read pieces of media for all of 2019? And I
Oh
said, "What
my
are you talking
gosh.
about?" And she said, "And you're the only LinkedIn article there." At the time, it had over 8 million impressions because, and I said, I argued with her. I said, "No, it doesn't have that many on LinkedIn." She goes, No. It has been tweeted, it's been Facebooked, it's been on the news already. It is all over the world." And it was a gift. It was an absolute gift because I gave this gift to other people, but it was a gift to me because I went, "Whoa, I do have a voice and I'm going to use it more." So my voice is for women. My voice is about being gritty, tenacious, and passionate. And yeah, men have those traits as well, but women have those in spades. They're in their DNA. So yeah, that started my voice for women. Not that I didn't think I already had it, but it just went crazy after that. I actually created a t-shirt with that on it. That said, strong women don't have attitude, they have standards and boundaries. And I've seen it three times on other people. Once at SeaTac Airport. I was like,
Oh my
"I don't know
gosh.
you, but can I have my picture with you?"
And I love the eight qualities that you laid out of a strong woman. She stands up for herself, invests in herself, has boundaries, celebrates other women, knows her worth, doesn't rely on others' opinions about her life, is confident, and decides to be strong. I think that is just so amazing and affirming. Did that set the
Thanks.
stage for your podcast, Lead Like a Woman? Did that lead you to start the podcast?
So it didn't lead me to start the podcast. I'd wanted to have a podcast for a while. I just didn't know which way I was going to take it. What it did is it set the stage. So I realized right then that women leaders are important to this world. I did a lot of research into it. And a friend of mine who's a branding expert, she doesn't like that I say lead like a woman. She wants me to say lead as a woman. And I said, alliteration is my thing. We're going with lead like a woman. But it set that stage because so many women need to hear that. They don't believe it. They grow up in circumstances such as mine, or even worse, and they don't believe that they can stand up for themselves, that they can choose to be confident every day. Even when you don't feel confident, choose confidence. That is my story about walking into that big conference room when I was 25 years old. I chose to be confident. So yeah, it's just been a theme.